Mr. Day, Reel 2. We're talking about the typhoid and smallpox injections that people were given, starting at the drill hall and then going right through the period before they went overseas. The actual reactions, they varied. Did some men really suffer from it? Because I've heard people say that they had a lot of trouble after their injections.
They did have a secondary infection through the lymph vaccine that was given. Many men did. Many men had very bad arms.
What would happen to their arms?
They had to put in a sling. And they had, at that time, of course, there wasn't the antibiotics as there are today. We're talking some 50 years ago. There was sulfanilamide and there was MMB 693, which was May and Baker, and the number of the drug was 693. That MMB 693 was the latest thing at that time, in 1939, in antibiotics in medicine. One gave it in meningitis and pneumonia and in secondary infections we were talking about now.
And would that bring them down? Would they swell up the arm? Or
the
would
arm was, yes.
And that would control it?
That would help to control it. The men must have rest, must be in bed and rest and properly treated.
Were the officers and NCOs sympathetic to that need?
To the
need for the men to have rest? Because
it was nothing really to do. A man reported sick and he was given light duties or return to duty, or in this case, abstaining from duty, no duty whatsoever, and he was attended by the doctor daily, or maybe twice a day, depending upon the seriousness of the injury.
And how long would it take to get better, the arm?
It did take quite some time in some cases.
Such as?
Probably a fortnight.
So quite a serious...
10 days, fortnight, yes. And they had quite some wounds, and had to be hot fermentation. Some various bouts, some reacted better to other treatments than others, but MMB 693 was, and sulfanilamide was the most.
I'll come back to those drugs, because I'm going to ask you about what you had in your medicine cabinet, so, you know, were any of the men afraid of being injected, or did any of them object on religious or moral grounds?
No, none objected, none refrained from it. There was quite... You notice that the more boisterous started at the end of the queue, and when they got to the actual their turn, they just passed out. They were given an injection and gone. But that's what one found about that. The more boisterous, they're sort of letting off nervous energy until 6 times their turn came, and then that sort of blew the whole thing.
Now, was everybody given this, or would some people, now... Children are inoculated at school for a lot of these things. Would there be any sort of chance of anyone having been inoculated before these injections? And was any?
Yes, not with the tetanus, but with the smallpox. Yes, people have arms on the people have marks on their arms now. They were given at my time when I was given. I was given four. There's four scars on your left arm, like dots on the dice.
So it didn't matter that if they were getting a double dose.
As a rule, if they had it as a child, it didn't take. I never took. I was given it, I never took. I'm probably still immune from my child. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm just, I'm just saying what exactly happened. And I was always acting under the instructions of the doctor. One did learn it.
So they just got it anyway.
That is right.
Everybody got it. So that was one job you had to do. What were the other duties you were doing during this initial period?
Well, we used to have to... I used to go around... In the first instance, in the morning, we had sick parade. And the batteries, the battery sergeant or the NCO on duty would bring the sick man of that particular unit, A troop, B troop, regimental headquarters, whoever, would bring him to the MI room and we would attend to their various requirements, whatever they were suffering from.
How was that organised, though? Were you the MO, and then you were the orderly. Was there another orderly?
Yes, two more. One who helped with the dressings, one who wrote on the sick report, attend A, attend B, attend C, various degrees of duties he had to do, or no duties at all. And those who were attend C, which were confined to bed, we used to visit. Billets were set up around Willington and England.
I'll come back to that. So you had the dresser, the dressing medical assistant, the writer, and what was the third one?
We had two dressing.
And that was all that you had. In, that was the setup, the medical setup. Three orderlies and one MO. So, in these early stages, let's say at the drill hole, when someone came to the MO to see them, would it be like a doctor's reception almost? How was it organised?
Who
do you speak to first then?
The doctor.
So the doctor would be there.
He was a good morning, Donna so and so, or sergeant, or whatever rank, and of what do you complain? Not what is the matter with you, because the obvious answer to that is that is what I've come to you to find out. What do you complain? I've got a bad answer. Or you were out last night and the day, that sort of thing. There's some quite serious ones. Two in particular. We did have a meningitis.
Later on. Right, I'll come. So, during this period, it would just be fairly trivial things, I would imagine, while you're at Derby.
Yes, we have quite a bit of at Derby Road. Well, not a lot at Derby Road, because we weren't there an awful long time.
No.
We went to Willington.
Right, well, let's move on then. Anything else you remember while you're at Derby before we move on to Willington?
I remember when we left Derby Road, the hall. I remember the various battery commanders forming the battery after battery form up, tension, light turn, whatever. And I remember the band going down Derby Road and the regiment went down Wharton Street. And I remember the band doubling up from Derby Road to get in front of the regiment going down Wharton Street in transit to the Victoria Station. And we had army boots on with Blakeys and studs, and we fell all over the place. I can remember somebody saying, thank God we've got a navy. But it wasn't all so, that wasn't. And eventually, of course, we set off and we went to the Victoria Station. And we entrained. And after a lot of fond farewells and kissing from mothers and fathers and sweethearts and relations, we steamed out. Only to be shunted back again, which proved them sort of an anticlimax. And one of the first men that I sort of got to know, and I got to know him very well, my great friend, was a tall, red-faced, ginger-haired youth. He was a gunner, and he had a briefcase. And at that time of day, I thought, this man, a briefcase, it must be terribly important. Anybody with a briefcase, very important. And we got off the evening, he said, what's your name? I said, my name is Harry Day. He said, my name is Pat Bland. Would you like a bottle of beer? And this briefcase was full of Shipston's knockdown beer. And that was my initial meeting with my mate, Pat Bland. He got killed on the 27th of May.
So that was the move, that would be about the towards the end of September 39, so according
moved to Willington, that's right.
Now, what happened when you got to Willington? What was the setup? Where did you go into billets?
Well, Lloyd Davis, Captain Lloyd Davis, who was an analytical chemist at Boots, he was posted as a reserved occupation, so I was led to believe, and we had a doctor called John Finnegan, who came from a locum practice at Stoke-on-Trent, Longton, Stoke-on-Trent, and we requisitioned the doctor's house at Willington for an MI room. The upper two rooms, I believe were two rooms, were taken as a sergeant's mess.
What does you have noticed? MI stands for?
MI room, medical inspection.
So the sergeant's mess upstairs.
Upstairs.
And downstairs you took over.
Was our medical inspection room, yes.
And that's where you do this morning sick parade.
Sick parade in the mornings, that's right.
So what was your daily duties like then? I mean,
in the mornings I was there, always had to be in attendance. By this time I'd risen to the fabulous rank of Lance Bombardier. I got a stripe and doctor, of course, he was a man, he was a charge, but after him, I was in charge, and we tended to the sick, and then we went and visited the sick at various billets where they were outside of Rillington.
And what were the main problems you were picking up at Rillington? It wouldn't be anything, it would be army, UK home army problems. What sort of things were the most common things?
A lot of them were still these arm infections. And they'd had from the smallpox in the vaccinations, a lot of them were there. There was a great deal of men suffering with blisters because they'd been used to wearing soft shoes in civil life, and of course they had army boots, there was that.
What could you do about that?
Send John an osteopathy course, eventually. Yeah, I went to an osteopathy course, that's the one time afterwards.
So what else would other problems that were?
There wasn't a lot, really. They were all young men, and mainly very fit young men, too. But we did have quite an epidemic of flu.
Was this real flu or colds?
Yes, influenza. There was an epidemic of influenza in England at that time, in 1939, and also there was quite an epidemic of meningitis. And we had one case in England and one case on board the boat there.
How would you treat influenza then? This
gargle, aspirin, Dover's powders, and antibiotics, which was MMB693 and sulfamidmine.
Right. Now, and they were the main things that were coming up, the arms, blisters and influenza.
Yeah.
What about any breakages with breaking legs and arms?
There was no one at Rillington who had any accidents, as far as I can remember, but there was at Rackby.
So, during this period, what they'd have this morning thing. About how many people report in each morning at Rillington?
Oh, possibly 20, 25, 30, something like that.
That's quite a lot. That would be the arms mainly, would it?
Quite a lot of it, yes. Still quite a lot of those in Rillington.
So what were your other duties then? You'd help as either, I'll come back to the jobs of dressing and writing when we get to a more interesting phase of the war, if you see.
Yeah.
But what else would you have to do?
Well, I had to clean up after all this, everything that was worked properly. Elementary medicines had to be mixed, like use or and things like that. The bottles have got to be refilled. We had to indent to go along to the medical supplies, the army medical supplies to get new drugs, the replacements of drugs that we had been using, and bandages and cotton wool and various medical liquids. That was done about once a week. We also had to visit the hospital. I'm talking now of Rugby. We had to go into Lincoln Hospital and see how the men who had been sent to hospital, men we couldn't treat, how they were shaping, because we knew that in the near future they were going to leave England. We didn't know what to do again, but once we're going to leave England, we want to know the situation to bring regarding the strength of the regiment.
Now, that's Rugby, but during the first bit, you'd be, instead of that, I mean, you'd go around, did you do your out visits to the people who were?
That's right. We had various barns and old houses, not very good, in fact, not very good at all. We had to go and visit them there. And we had various medical orders looking after that particular unit and tending to the sick there at that time.
So, and what time would you finish for the day?
Oh, we didn't. I mean, you finished when, I mean, sometimes when you were called out in the middle of the night if anybody met with any accident at all. A man might come to you with toothache, real or imaginary, after you had some beer in you. That sort of thing. There's nothing really out of the way. I mean, that's what you're there for.
So you were continually on call.
Yes.
What were your billets like at Rillington? Your own billet. Were you actually?
I slept in front of the Rillington. I slept in front of the fire in Mrs. Cottingham's drawing room downstairs. We used to use a kitchen, a Bunsen burner, boil water on for the hot fermentations and whatever, and, you know, general cocktails and things.
That was the doctor's wife, Mrs. Cottingham,
no,
wasn't
no.
it? No, this is next door.
I'm sorry, yeah. No, this was at Willington, yes. No, it was at the doctor's at Willington, the doctor's house. I slept in his front room.
And that's Mrs. Cottingham?
Yes.
And how were you fed?
At Willington, I used to go across the road to a little cafe. Of course, a Yorkshireman, very nice bloke, he used to get me all sorts of fantastic breakfast, eggs and sausage and bread and whatever. Midday, I used to go along to the regimental canteen.
Now, there's been a lot of complaints about the food at Willington. I mean, did you find that the food was bad, or were you happy with it?
Well, I used to eat at this gas cafe. It didn't cost me but 1 or 6 pence in the morning for breakfast. That was about dinner for the day.
Was that because the food was so... I mean, did you have any opinions about the food?
No, food was all right. I used to eat occasionally. Yeah, quite often in the regimental, you know, regimental canteen, the cookhouse. And I never had any trouble.
Now, how about the Willington civilians? How did you get on with them?
Very well. They were Yorkshire people, very hospitable. You could always go in for a tea on a Saturday or any night, for that matter, and you could also hot bath if you wanted to, which was very acceptable. When you'd either been playing football or rugby football, it was great to go and have a hot bath in the neighbouring, you know, we always got to know people like that, and, oh, dude, come and have a cup of tea with us, and come and have a drink with us, and have a bath while you're here. That was very, very nice people, as they were at rugby.
Now, you mentioned sport, and you mentioned sport off the start. You were playing a lot of sport while you were with the regiment in Willington and rugby, were you? You mentioned rugby.
We had two matches of rugby against Digby Oakland, RAF. I think we had an interregimental, inter-battery match at Willington. I would not be sure of that, but we did have one or two at rugby. Yes.
Was it the high standard of rugby?
There were some very good players in the South Notts. Peter Birkin, who I think at that time was captain of Notts. There was Charles Laborde, Captain Laborde, who was an England trials man. There were a lot of the lads who played for Nottinghamshire. Pat Bland, I believe, he played for Nottinghamshire. Of course, Bob Foles, he played for the high school. Pat Bland was a hooker, very good. They were good players. I was by far the smallest man. I mean, somebody had Aggie Carr, he was about 19 stones.
What position did you play?
I played wing three quarter.
And what about the opposition you played? Would they be up to that standard?
Yes.
Was overall a high standard of rugby?
That is true.
What about any other winter games? I mean, it was getting into winter. Was football popular?
I played football. I played occasionally, but with some success. Ian Sinclair was very good at that. He was a very good football player.
Football?
Soccer player.
What about any other races? Boxing? Was there any boxing at the time?
I don't recall any boxing while we were in England. We did have a boxing match in Mercy completely.
You had your medical duties. Were you expected to get fit as well? I mean, things like route marches or general...
Oh, I was excluded route marches.
So your fitness was sport, not from regimental things?
That's right.
Now, in November, they moved up to rugby, that we've already mentioned a couple of things of. But where were you billeted there?
In a house on the Market Raisin Road.
And what was the setup for the MI room?
Pretty much the same at Willington, only possibly more primitive. The doctor's house at Willington was rather better than the one at rugby.
It was another doctor's house, was it?
No.
Oh, this is ordinary.
Just an ordinary lady who was disgusted and afraid of the way we left it.
Why was that?
Well, we had heating equipment on her table, which didn't do the table much good at all. When you have to boil needles, you have to have a flame underneath the water to boil it, and you know, heat comes and it blisters the table. But we did our best.
And your routine would be pretty well the same at rugby, as we've discussed, your day's routine.
Yes.
But the one point I'd like to pick out, which you mentioned, was that almost the weeding, there's two sides to it. One, the weeding out process, and two, the people whose health had failed and were in and weren't going to go. How has that gone about? Had a conscious weeding out process started of people who were too old or too unfit?
I don't think there was any man sent back for any purpose at all until we got overseas. I think there was one man, I think Lieutenant Bird was left in England, but I wouldn't be sure. He was a quartermaster, officer quartermaster, Lieutenant Bird.
So your main problem was checking the hospitals for people who'd fallen ill to make sure they'd be better in time to go in January?
Yes, we used to do that about once a month, or possibly twice a month. Well, of course, during the time, when it came up to the time, we were obviously going to leave England, we did it more often.
And what were they in hospital with?
There was a pneumonia case. I think we had a pneumonia case. I think we had two appendix. One or two arms were grossly infected. They had to be sent in because of running temperatures.
And would they all get better in time, these cases, or did you have to leave them?
No, they all, as far as I recall, they all got fit enough to come overseas when we left Rugby for ultimately for Palestine. And this particular incident occurred. We used to go in a PU truck with the doctor and driver Chadburn, Frank, and myself sitting between them on a sort of a heater. And one afternoon we stopped outside Timothy White's chemist's near the Stone Bowl in Lincoln. And Dr. Finnegan said to me, Frank Chadburn, pass the indent pad. So he passed the indent pad and he scribbled on the indent pad. He said, Pomerade, eh? Go and fetch these. Well, I said, if you want those bloody things, you can fetch them yourself, because I'm not fetching them. Dave, if you don't get out of this bloody truck, I'll put you on a bloody charge. I'm not going. Get out. Chadburn, let him out. Go on. Get off. So I was young and impressionable and a bit sort of self-conscious. And I looked in this chemist's shop, I chiked in, I thought, oh, which is an old man, an old woman, right? But there wasn't. There was this blonde girl, 18, I suppose. And I went in, I said, hello, good afternoon. Have you got any razor blades, please, or toothpaste? She said, no, you don't want razor blades or toothpaste, do you? She said, I said, no. What do you want? I said, I want some Durex. All right, well, everybody, I've sold quite a lot in the first year. How many do you want? I said, well, I want 10,000. I said, there's an indent here, I suppose you'll get the money from the War Office. I don't know, but I want to get off, you know. I thought, I was most embarrassed as a young man. One of my most embarrassing moments in my life, you know. You get quite a few. That I remember very well.
Was it really 10,000?
Yes. That's what he'd written down. Funny he'd written down.
Would the shop have that many?
Well, I don't know.
Or was it to the firm, almost?
I would think it would go to the supplier. Is there a company? Must be a company called. That's obvious. And it must have been to the supplier.
Did you issue constant Durex then to the men?
Yes, because
only overseas.
Only overseas.
Right, I'll come back to that. So that was one story. Are there any other stories that sort of give us a flavour of life before you went overseas? You know.
Yes, in Lincoln again on a Saturday afternoon, and I'd sort of an afternoon off. I used to go like a lot of other young men do and chike girls in Lions Corner houses, as they were, and Catholic League get a jolly good tea for half a crown. And this particular one had a downstairs room and an upstairs room. And I went up the stairs, and on the top of the stairs there was a mirror. And there I was, with my peak cap on, my suede cane on my arm, my spurs, my green breeches, and my putties. Turned sharply right, I had my tea, all the girls, came back again, looked at the mirror, thought, my God, what a handsome young man he is, yeah. Touched my spur in the top step, did about four double salts down the stairs, hit the mat at the bottom, went straight to the swing door, into the, across the pavement, into the gutter, where I think that's where I belonged, actually. And then somebody said, who the hell threw that? And that was your sincere in the gutter.
Was there any problem, I mean, you know, with young lads like yourself coming into a Lincoln, Was there any problem over the local girls and the local lads that had?
No.
There was no jealousy from the local lads who weren't in uniform.
No, I mean, you know, I don't know. We weren't that coming forward, but I think it's fair to say all the lads are dying here. We didn't sort of go out of our way to make a girl our property, if you know what I mean. If she was showed interest, all right, we were young, but no.
So there's no trouble over women
in
the locals. Now, one thing, what was Finnegan like, your MO?
Finnegan was a very good medical, regimental doctor. He had a great knowledge, and he had a great understanding of medicine. I have worked with a lot of doctors, English, Irish, Scottish, Italian, German, South African. Some men are, but they have to take medical degrees and they are licensed to practice medicine by law. Other men are natural doctors. No matter who you are, and whatever station of life, they will go out of the way, as is their duty and their sworn oath, to look after anyone who needs medical attention. He was one of those.
Now, a couple of the men have said that he liked to drink, but that, I also said it didn't affect his duties. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes, to a certain extent. I wish you were here now. I could ask you when I could tell this, but it's, that came later.
Did he treat you well?
He treated me very well. He imparted a lot of medical knowledge with me, and he used to do sessions at night, and there was nothing else to do, talking of nothing else but medicine. And I remember one night at Ragby, there was a lad who fell off a parapet, and he wounded, he got quite an incision over his forehead and his hand and his arm. And he said to the officer, who was George Jones, he said, "I think it's about time Bombardier Bay learned to suture." So Bombardier Bay had to suture, sterilise the suture needles and the silkworm gut and thread the needle and suture this man up. I think I put about 6 in his forehead, 3 in his hand and about 4 in his arm. In suturing, you've got to have good opposition. You mustn't leave a gap or you get scarification forming. You mustn't get a bulge, which is two edges pulled too tightly together, forming a bulge. Good scarification, good opposition is everything.
What's scarification, sorry?
Scar.
Scar tissue form.
Scar tissue form between the two edges of the wound. The regiment was visited by the DDNS Northern Command,